It's 6:07 here on WGN. Hey, it's John Hanson. This is Your Money Matters. Coming up next, we will have an analyst breaking down your 401k. And I'm telling you, if you don't contribute enough to your 401k, you're going to want to listen to this. And I'm telling you also to call your kids and call your grandkids and tell them to listen to this segment, because we're about to teach you all about compounding interest and why a 22-year-old can make a ton of money just by matching some minimums on their 401k. We'll also talk about the housing market and if people are going to jump in. And we do have a question of the day today. You can get on the line now and answer 312-981-7200 after our question of the day rolled over four times. Maybe we'll hopefully get an answer tonight. You'll win a WGN t-shirt, a special one at that. And here's the question. Before the year 2020, as a percentage of GDP, basically what year in U.S. history was the country most in debt? Before the year 2020. 312-981-7200. If you got any guesses, we'll hopefully get an answer next on Your Money Matters on WGN. This show is all about helping you get a little bit of extra money in your pocket and saving it there and spending, doing different things to make it spend a little bit more wisely. And one of the interesting things we continually talk about is the national debt and how that impacts all of us. It's a very complex thing. But that's the start of today's question of the day. It's about the national debt as it pertains to the entire GDP. So a little perspective here. In 2020, basically the national debt reached the highest level, not only like nominally, like it's obviously the highest number it's ever been, but when you compare it to how much money the United States is able to produce, that percentage is really what people look at to determine just how in debt we are. And we reached 128% of our GDP in 2020, which was a huge jump from some earlier years. But what was the year before 2020 in which we had the highest GDP debt to ratio? I know that's a little complicated. Just basically, what else in our history where we're in super in debt? And we're going to go to the phone lines. Line one, let's get Ron on the line here. Ron, how are you doing here this evening?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
I'm doing pretty good. What's your guess for the year we had really high debt?
My guess was 1980.
You know, Ron, I wish I could give you bonus points because that's actually one of the lowest years on my chart.
Oh, my gosh, because I was thinking about the blizzard that hit here in 79. I remember shoveling as a kid, and I remember money was costing like 15% on houses.
Oh, I bet. Yeah, interest rates were high then, and, of course, inflation was super high in the late 70s through the early 80s, but we were paying off our debt, so that is not the answer. But thanks for calling, Ron, okay?
Thank you.
Take care. 312-981-7200. A little bit later on, we're going to be talking about your money, of course, your 401ks, and how to boost them. Boy, that is an important thing. And there is just some staggering numbers. I've talked about it on this show, but I'm sure any 22-year-old out there that you know, you should call them and tell them to listen right now, because there's insane stuff that we're leaving on the table. It's basically free money when your company offers you a match, and it's shocking how few people actually take the match. So we're going to chat about that. But let's go to line two here for our guest on the question of the day. Nancy, how are you doing?
Hi, how are you? Love
doing
your
great
show.
Oh, thank you, Nancy. What's your guest today?
1876 during the Civil War.
Interesting. Yeah, the Civil War wrapped up a little bit before then. I was thinking maybe the Civil War as well, but that's not the answer. We did have high debt then, but it wasn't the highest. But thanks for calling, Nancy. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
All right, let's go to Nancy on line one for a guest. Hey, Nancy.
How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm going to guess 2014 or 15.
2000. Pick one.
Oh, dear.
It's okay.
2014.
Okay, it's not 2014, but it was incredibly high. Before we reached this 128% threshold, in the mid-teens, we were kind of at the same level, at about 105%. But we were actually higher than that before that at some time, so that's not the answer, Nancy. Thanks for the phone call, though.
Thanks.
Let's go to Vicky. Vicky, hey, you're on WGN. Vicky, how are you doing?
Very good, thank you.
What's your guess?
My guess is the year 2008.
That's not the answer, but what you are hitting on here is we went from about 60% of our GDP in debt in 2007. In the next couple of years, 7, 8, 9, 10, we got all the way up to 100%. So you're right on with the thinking, but there was a time where we were actually a little bit ahead of that. Thanks so much, Vicky. Appreciate the phone call. All right, let's go to line number one. We got Barbara on the line. Hey, Barbara, what's your guess?
Well, my guess is 1945.
Why is your guess that?
World War II.
Yes.
Because
I heard that after World War II, we had a lot of debt.
That is absolutely right. I'm so glad we got an answer to the question of the day in one segment instead of 4 days. Yes, that's absolutely right, Barbara. Before 2020, our national debt topped out at about 120% of our gross domestic product, and it plummeted after that. In the 60s, we're at 40%. In the late 70s, we were at 28, 29%. And since then, it has just ballooned, ballooned, ballooned. And in 2020, which makes sense, it's difficult circumstances. We had to keep a lot of people afloat, a lot of businesses afloat. But I'd say it's about time we start bringing that down, Barbara. What do you think?
I would hope we could.
Yes. All right, well, tell you what, stay on the line. You're going to chat with Iridian next, and you're getting something special. You are getting an exclusive WGN Radio 100th Anniversary T-shirt. Does that sound good, Barbara?
I'm real happy to receive it. Thank you.
All right, we're going to put you on hold. You'll talk to Iridian. We're going to talk about all your 401ks. Stay tuned. Call your wife, call your friends, call your husbands. Everyone needs to listen to this next conversation. But first, let's get a look at weather and traffic with Kevin Wells.
Hello, John. I was going to guess 1945, too. I don't know.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's really easy to say after Barbara got it, okay?
40 minutes inbound, Lake Cook to Montrose on the Edens. Brake lights between Dempster and the Junction. We also have an accident on the inbound Kennedy at California. Two right lanes blocked. A car has hit the outbound wall there. So now the Kennedy inbound is a absolute parking lot all the way back to the junction and beyond. So it's going to take you a lot of time getting into downtown. The outbound side, about 30 minutes. Not too bad there. Eisenhower is just over an hour to the old post office. Brake lights between Wolf and Austin. Stevenson, 45 minutes to the drive from I-355. Still solid traffic on the Dan Ryan as well. Chinatown feeder ramp and the burn, 25 minutes into downtown. Kevin Wells, WGN Traffic Central.
And I guarantee not every one of you is taking advantage of it. Here to chat about that is Securian Financial Senior Director of Retirement Solutions, Ted Schmelsley. Ted, thanks for hopping on the line with us here today.
You bet. It's wonderful to be with you.
And this really is free money we're talking about that people are leaving out there. We're talking about employer matches on your 401k. Just backing up a little bit, just, you know, I love to make sure everyone understands what we're chatting about here. 401ks, generally an easy definition. What would you have for us, Ted?
You bet. So interesting. 401ks essentially is we've seen a shift in how people prepare for retirement from what used to be like a pension plan where you could get a check in retirement from your company once you retire to an account balance plan like a 401k where you're contributing to that over your career and building up an account balance. So it's really incumbent on you to put in the money that you're going to use for retirement.
How many companies, so like you put your own money in a certain percentage, and we can talk about how much you should or shouldn't put in. How many companies offer a match, which is essentially they say, okay, if you put in X percent, we will also match you dollar for dollar for that. How many companies offer something like that, generally speaking?
Yeah, so what we found amongst our client base, about 93% of the companies that Securian Financial works with, and understand, we've been in the insurance, investment, and retirement solutions business since 1880. We've got about 21 million customers across North America. So we've got a lot of experience here. About 93% of the companies we work with offer some kind of match. And if you're in a plan that has a match and you're not maximizing that match, you're leaving money on the table.
What is the average match? I mean, I know some places will offer 3%. Some are more generous than that. Where does it fall generally?
Yeah, there's a broad range. And so what I would say is that rather than getting focused on what the exact match is, it's really important to understand how you take best advantage of that. So some, you know, the plan design might be that they match a certain percentage up to as another percentage that you put in. What you really want to focus on is understanding your plan and then putting in the maximum, you know, at a minimum, putting in the amount that you're going to take full advantage of the match that your company offers.
So if the company is at 5%, you need to put 5%. And if you put 4% in, okay, you're doing something, but you're literally leaving one percentage of your salary on the table.
That's exactly right. And so, you know, the companies that you're working for, and, you know, in this competitive environment, of course, companies are using retirement plans and this kind of a match to be a competitive advantage to attract talent, because it's definitely the case today that folks are in understanding they've got mobility, they can move around. Hey, what are you willing to do for me for a retirement plan?
Yeah. How many percentage of people don't do it? The number is going to make me feel sad.
Yeah. It's interesting that in one particular survey, one out of four employees are not taking advantage of their match.
No.
And so, yeah, it's staggering, right? So 25% of people out there, one in four, are not taking advantage of this money that's being essentially just on the table for you if you put in enough to your own 401k.
And I know we say it's free money. Yes, you do have to put some of your own, you know, savings in there as well to get it. But essentially, it is free money. I was just, you know, just to kind of rationalize this for our listeners, like just putting some numbers out there. If you're getting out of college, let's say you're 22, 23 years old, and you're making 60 grand and you get a 5% company match, you're going to, and you put in 5%, you get matched 5%. Essentially, $500 a month is going into your retirement account. I just plugged that into a compounding interest calculator. Yeah, in 10 years, you're going to have $95,000. I mean, like, this is stuff that needs to be taught to our younger generation. Would you agree?
I couldn't agree more. In fact, the example that you just highlighted is so powerful. Getting in at an early age and investing those dollars when you're young, relatively speaking, or starting out your career, are probably the most impactful dollars that you're ever going to invest, because it has that time to compound over your career to being a significant and meaningful account balance when you're ready for retirement. So I couldn't agree more. And there's lots of mechanisms that plans can use to help you get into it. You know, one is automatic enrollment, for example. That's where you come into your employer and you're automatically enrolled. It helps to create that inertia, and inertia is such a powerful thing in our lives, right? So you're automatically enrolled and you got the money's going in. You have to say, I don't want it. You have to take affirmative action to not be in the plan.
If you are listening right now and you're over 50 and you're saying, you're kind of smacking your head, you maybe didn't do it when you were younger. First of all, you're not alone. In fact, I guarantee a lot of 20-year-olds didn't do this. And, you know, it's okay. You can actually catch up a little bit, right, Ted?
You can. So the good news is it's never too late to start, right? I love the old adage that the best time to plant a tree was yesterday. The second best time to plant a tree is today. So start, right? Figure out where you're at. I'd recommend you talk with a financial advisor, make sure you understand your whole situation, and then start saving as much as you can. Current law allows you to, you know, it caps the amount that you can put into a 401k. Those amounts increase as you hit certain ages, 50, 55. You're able to put in more to your qualified plan to catch up. So there are mechanisms you can use to start saving more. You know, Securian Financial's got a network of advisors across the country, as do many other firms. It's a great idea to talk with some of those people, understand where you sit, and figure out how you can catch up.
I don't want to say set it and forget it like those old commercials about cooking things, because you don't want to forget about it, because you want to be checking for rebalancing, making sure you're all, you know, you're stock heavy early, and then you start to get a little bit more conservative as you get older. But you shouldn't be checking every day your balance, right?
Yeah, particularly with the kind of volatility that we've experienced, or in potentially a bear market. It's good to know what you're invested in. It's very important to make sure you've got the right diversification across asset classes. That's important. But what I would say is, you know, understanding what your account balance is, and if you're looking at it and you're making emotional decision, it's probably a time to step back and get some advice from a trusted advisor, a financial advisor, to say, what should I do? So it's great to know what you're in, for sure. Be diversified, know what your balance is, but try to step back. Don't make an emotional decision, because ultimately retirement is for the long term.
Yeah. Speaking of the long term, Ted, I was playing with my compounding interest calculator, which is a fun game to play. And that scenario in which that person out of college made $60,000, they put $250 away, $250 away a month, and then the company matched them. If they did that for 45 years, so when they're 67, they'd have $3.1 million. That's if they didn't make another dime or contribute any more, which, of course, you would want to do. But that's just to illustrate how, if you start early, boy, that sets you on the right track. Ted, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate your time.
Excellent to be with you. Thank you for having me. Have a great evening.
Yeah, that's Ted Schmelsley, the Securian Financial Senior Director of Retirement Solutions. Quick break, and then we'll have the news coming up on WGN. WGN news coming up in just a moment. A bipartisan group of senators introducing a bill today to ban the U.S. imports of Russian oil. They say the shipments could be replaced by boosting output in North America and other places. I just got a question for you. 312-981-7200. Are you willing to pay more at the pump? We're at $4 a gallon now. You okay with paying $5, $6 a gallon to help save democracy potentially? I don't know. It's a tough swallow for a lot of you. For others, it seems like a no-brainer. Kind of curious where you fall on that. 312-981-7200. Maybe take a couple calls after the news break as well, and we'll talk about the housing market as we go into the spring after the news here on WGN. Speaking of Blackhawks hockey, I'm in the basement right now at the United Center. Of course, I'm one of the in-arena hosts. We got a huge game tonight. You heard Kevin mentioning it, of course. We got Duncan Keith back in the building, and Nicholas Jalmerson, Hammer. We're honoring him at the United Center tonight. So if you're making your way over, hope you're driving safe. And we got a lot of fun stuff in store for you. But, of course, we got the broadcast at 7. Well, that'll be the pregame with Joe Brand. And a lot of great stuff you'll be able to hear from the United Center. I was mentioning before the news this bipartisan group of U.S. senators introducing a bill to ban U.S. imports of Russian oil. So if you thought $4 a gallon was high, even though we don't import all that much in Russian oil, it still will have an impact at the pump. The Banning Russian Energy Imports Act, they always have fun names for these things, is intended to push Putin over his invasion of Ukraine. Sponsored by 18 senators, including Joe Manchin, who, of course, is a conservative Democrat, and Lisa Murkowski, a Republican. Nancy Pelosi in the House says she supports the ban. No idea if it would get 60 votes, but you've got some liberal Democrats and some pretty conservative Republicans jumping on, too. And John Tester, who's a Democrat from Montana, where they produce a bunch of oil, says, "I don't believe this country should be importing anything from Russia." The White House is not gone that far yet, and Russia produces about 10% of the world's crude, of course, and that's going to have an impact on the world gas pump prices, amongst other things. So that's kind of my question, 312-981-7200. I know there's a lot of support for Ukraine. That's been a really emotional thing to see. Are you okay with gas prices going up to $5 or $6 to, quote-unquote, defend democracy? I know that's a real simplification, but we got a lot of great texts, 312-981-7200, if you want to add yours to the list. 608 says, "Yes, I am, but the system is crazy. We don't make enough oil as we could if we were self-sufficient and not with these strange policies. I would pay $6 a gallon to defend democracy." 815, Dan chimed in with, "My concern with the gas prices going up is that they tend to stay up. They take a long time to trickle down. I think once the gas prices go up over $4 or $5, they are going to stay there." 312-981-7200 if you want to add your thoughts to the conversation. Just wanted to also run down some of the other companies that have announced, not sanctions, but they're just not going to do business with Russia anymore. Nike chimed in. IKEA as well. They shut down stores in Russia today as trade restrictions, supply shutdowns added to that political pressure. French banks also, and lots of things. Apple, Ford, Shell. Some of them haven't gone quite as far as getting political, but they're just saying they support the United States action. Boeing getting involved as well. Brazilian plane maker Embraer. So we'll have to wait and see as this continues on what's going to happen. But obviously, the squeeze is on in Russia. Some people say it could go further. We'll have to wait and see. Hey, let's shift gears here a little bit, talk about the spring housing market. Normally the time when we start to see a bunch of inventory out there and it's going to be great and home prices are going up and okay, but we're going to be able to buy some stuff. Well, bank rate analyst Jeff Ostrowski joins us now to preview that spring housing market. Jeff, thanks for hopping on the line with us today.
Well, yeah, thanks for having me. And speaking of squeezes, home buyers are definitely feeling it this year.
Jeff, you're a professional. Look at that segue from one thing over to the next. Nice job, Jeff. Yeah, feeling the squeeze. There's just not the inventory. And we're talking historic lows, right?
Yeah, the lowest they've ever been, which is really sort of unexpected. I mean, 2 years ago when we went into the pandemic, we thought, you know, maybe we were going into another housing downturn. Everyone was having flashbacks to 15 years ago when the housing market crashed. And really the opposite happened. So we've had prices going up, we're at record high prices, and we're at record low inventory. So it's a really difficult time to be a buyer in the spring buying season.
Yeah, I just feel like, and I talked to a lot of my friends, older millennials or maybe younger Gen X people who just say, boy, I started waiting in 2013 because I felt that there was a bubble coming and it's going to burst. And boy, it's been the opposite. Just keeps on going up. This is a real run of house prices. And I feel for people who have just been kind of sitting on the fence, not knowing when to pull the trigger. And they certainly don't want to do it now.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, they don't want to, but by the same token, prices are at record highs. So, I mean, obviously, there's still demand out there. People are buying houses.
Right.
There are multiple bidding wars pretty much everywhere. And even a lot of the places in the country that were that were cool during the last bubble are hot now. So, you know, Chicago is one of those places, but, you know, a lot of places in the Midwest are just as hot as the coastal markets.
Obviously, me talking to my friends is anecdotal because millennials are getting in the game, right?
Yeah, they are. And we surveyed consumers a couple weeks ago, and we found that a significant percentage of millennials say they want to shop for homes this year. I mean, saying it and actually doing it are two different things, given the affordability squeeze, the mortgage rates have been rising, prices are really high. So yes, millennials definitely say they want to buy. They're in or even past their prime home buying years, and so they're out there having kids and you know, looking to set up houses. But it's they're definitely in the game, but it's a difficult game to play in right now.
Let's talk a little bit about interest rates and how that may change the game, but we'll do that after a check of weather and traffic. Let's go to Kevin Wells at the United Center, honoring Hammer and his legacy. A bunch of surprises at the United Center. If you're on your way here, you're going to see him in person. If not, you'll hear him on the radio. A puck drop after the 7:30 area, around that time. We're going to continue our conversation here with Jeff Ostrowski from Bankrate, talking about home sales and all sorts of wire and when and what we're going to do about this and why there's so few homes for sale. And I guess, Jeff, my biggest question right now is, why? I know that it's like a really great time to be a seller. You would think that a lot of people, maybe boomers who are looking to retire and downsize, I thought they would flood the markets with homes just knowing how high the prices are. Are we just not seeing that? Is there not enough land? Why are the prices so high and why there are so few homes for sale?
Yeah, it's a combination of things. So the home building has been pretty muted for the last 15 years. So ever since the Great Recession, home builders just haven't ramped up to the levels that they were at historically for decades, from World War II through maybe 2005. So there's a shortage of homes for sale, or new homes for sale. And then when we get these crazy run-ups in prices, it creates all sorts of unintended or unexpected consequences. So back in March of 2020, the pandemic hit right as the spring selling season was about to happen. And so a lot of people decided not to put their homes on the market. They thought maybe the market was going to crash. They didn't want people coming through their houses and spreading germs. So really the 2020 spring season was a wash. And then after that, the housing market just really accelerated. Prices started taking off, and it gets really difficult to sell your house when home prices are going crazy like they have been for the last 2 years. So it's the thinking becomes, yes, I can sell my house for more than I ever thought I'd get for it, but then what am I going to do? And so if I'm a homeowner and I paid $300 or $400 or $500 or whatever it is for my house, and I'm looking at my neighbor's house is selling for $700 and $800, right. I'm thinking, okay, that's ridiculous. There's no way I'm going to pay that. And so it just creates sort of this weird cycle where the homeowners are not selling. We've had a lot of homeowners just, instead of selling, they're taking equity out of their houses and they're renovating or they're putting on additions and they're deciding to just stay where they are as opposed to selling and either, you know, moving up or moving down.
All right, what's the game plan then? What should someone do if they're in the housing market?
Well, if you're a buyer, you've got to buy and just basically bargain as hard as you possibly can, but understand that you're going to have to be aggressive in terms of your bid. You're going to probably have competition, so you might be in a bidding war. And so in a market like this, it's really important just to set some limits. And knowing that you're going to get into the heat of battle and maybe be maybe feel pressure to spend more than you can really afford, so just know that going into this market, know that you're going to have to pay a lot compared to what prices were 3 and 4 and 10 years ago, and just if you're willing to do that, then do it and set some limits so that if you get into a bidding war, you can maybe you'll jack up your price by $20,000 and no more than that. But whatever the case is, just make sure you go in with a plan.
Should people shop around for mortgages too?
Yeah, definitely. There's a lot of research from Freddie Mac and others showing that if you compare at least three offers. You're going to save thousands of dollars over the life of the loan. So the rates and fees vary pretty widely from one lender to another. So it's very important that you look at three to five loan offers before you sign the paperwork.
And read the fine print, right? Because what you're talking about there is the fees or the points. That can be confusing to people, but you got to do your homework and start doing some math in your calculator.
Exactly. And it's confusing to me, and I study this stuff all day long, so I really feel for somebody who only does this once every 5 or 10 years.
What do you think about skipping inspections? I know for some people that's one of the reasons they get the house. But boy, that time before you sleep there, and even when you do start sleeping there, if you skipped an inspection, that can be something that keeps you up at night.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and so you're referring to the homeowners who are just so desperate to get a place that they're looking for any competitive advantage they can get, and so they're waiving inspection contingencies. And so if it's a really hot market, if there's a ton of competition for the house you want, you might have to waive the inspection contingency, which means you're promising the seller that you're not going to back out of the deal because there's, I don't know, some scuffed paint in the bathroom or the washing machine hose needs to be replaced. But the smart move on that front is to, even if you waive the inspection contingency, still hire a home inspector to look through the house. So you don't want to buy a house that has mold or has some kind of major foundation issues or major water damage that's hidden as you tour the house. So the wise move is waive the inspection if you feel like you have to, or waive the inspection contingency, but still pay a home inspector and have him go through the house. And that's that way you're signaling to the seller that you're not going to quibble over repairs that might cost $1,000 or $2,000, but you're also giving yourself assurances that you're not going to move into a house that has $100,000 or $200,000 in work that needs to be done that you didn't realize.
This is something that happened to me when I was selling my condo, the appraisal gap. Things didn't catch up quick enough, so I put my place on the market for X price, person agreed to that price, the appraisal came in low, and then it's kind of a tussle between the buyer and the owner, or the seller and the buyer, and also the bank, too. That's a confusing time for people.
Yeah, and that's a good point, because that's happening a lot. When you've got home prices going up 20% a year, you're right, appraisers don't always have the comparable values to support whatever the price is. So, and I would imagine that's what happened in the case of your condo. And so then in that case, you've got to, if you're the borrower, you have to, or the buyer, you have to decide what you're going to do. Are you going to come up with the extra 30 or 40 grand? Or are you going to walk away from the property and let somebody else get it? And so a lot of mortgage brokers, mortgage lenders are telling me that they're coaching buyers to expect that, to, you know, look at how much money you have in your savings, in addition to the down payment, how much extra can you come up with if there is an appraisal gap. And so that's definitely something that that buyers want to be aware of, and sellers also need to be aware of it, because it can create delays and confusion and just anxiety in the whole process.
Jeff Ostrowski, I really appreciate your time today. Thanks for helping us out.
Okay, thanks a lot, and enjoy the game.
Oh, I will, absolutely. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll tease what's coming up next week, get to a few of your texts after this on 720 WGN. News coming up from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Then, of course, we have Blackhawks hockey. A couple great texts coming in. Really appreciate all the input about gas prices. This from the 847. Yes, of course, the increase in gas price, a small price to pay as compared to what our fellow men and women experience in Ukraine. Small example of how we're all connected, no matter if some want to ignore that. The challenges of one become that of all. Only in working together as common humanity can we move forward and reap the benefits of all. That's from Bobby in Rochester, Minnesota. Lydia chimed in with saying she wants to defend democracy, but higher prices do have a domino effect throughout our economy. You're right. It's not just us filling up at the pump. That affects a lot of things, the trucking industry, a lot of other things and permutations of that. Hey, everyone, that's been a great week on Your Money Matters. Really appreciate you tuning on in. We're a Monday through Thursday show, so we're not on the air tomorrow. Next week, Steven Esposito's on Monday. We're going to chat with a sports memorabilia expert. You might have a lot of money sitting somewhere in your house. He's going to answer that question for you. Find out if we can get some more in your pocket. And I'm a minimalist. A YouTube star is going to join us and tell us how we can all spend a little bit less money. That's a look at next week.